You're listening to Kentucky Running, presented by John's Run Walk Shop in Lexington. Help others find this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing in your podcast app. This episode is sponsored by Curex Insoles.
Hey runners, thanks for tuning into another episode of Kentucky Running. I'm your host, Matt Reno. I know it's been a while. We've been on a little summer break. Hope you've been getting in some good miles, staying hydrated during this crazy heat we've been having. We're coming back with a fun episode today. I'm joined by Kellen Egg-Unielan, John's Run Walkshop's running shoe buyer, and we're going to dive into the world of super shoes. So Kellen, for those who aren't familiar with that term, how would you define a super shoe?
So I guess the short answer to that is a shoe with supercritical foam and a plate inside of it. That is probably the most concise way I can explore that answer.
Okay. And what do you mean by supercritical foam?
So around 2017, you saw this application of taking a... please excuse my rudimentary knowledge of chemical engineering here.
That's okay.
It kind of starts off as polyurethane, like almost looks like a matchbook. This very small polyurethane, which is essentially a midsole, or it's eventually going to become one. They take this polymer and they heat it with all sorts of pressure. And as it starts to sort of liquefy, it's injected with some degree of gas. And so this polymer expands and you get a midsole foam that is very lightweight, very soft, but also very resilient. And that was sort of a new way to create midsoles that previously, if you had something that was very soft, it was not very resilient. It sort of compressed and it stayed compressed. If it was responsive, it tended to be very firm and often quite heavy. So the idea that you could sort of fuse the best of both worlds, a shoe that was very soft but also very lightweight and would respond incredibly well to sort of loading, sort of when weight during that landing phase of your gait cycle, when you would step into the shoe or land at high impact, it would regain its shape rather quickly. That's how I would define what makes a supercritical foam as it applies to super shoes. The plate is the other part of it that came around.
And what are the benefits of the plate? First of all, what is the plate made of?
The first super shoe in 2017 used a carbon fiber plate, and it was the Nike Vaporfly 4%. And they launched it with this big campaign trying to get a bunch of elite athletes under 2 hours of the marathon. Since then, though, the question regarding what defines a super shoe in 2025 is much more complex, meaning they aren't just carbon fiber plates now. There's a sort of rod system in some shoes. They have different materials being made of nylon or PBAX or different sort of materials to where it complicates what started in 2017 as a very clear and decisive sort of turn towards a different kind of shoe. It has in the 8 years since become a rather nuanced world of running shoe footwear.
Okay. Well, let's back up a little bit and talk about the genesis of the super shoe. When did we start seeing these emerge? You said 2017, but was there anything going on before then?
I think with the experimentation with different kind of foam outside of EVA, which had defined running shoes for the longest time, ethyl vinyl acetate is what that stands for. But that for decades, that was what was primarily used. So you saw the playing around with different material moving away from EVA, but the application of a plate amidst a stack height, meaning sort of how much midsole is in a shoe. There's sort of a convergence there with there sort of a manufacturer's playing with different midsole material. In around the 2010s, you saw increased maximalist shoes like had a very thick midsole material. And studying that was going on at University of Colorado at this time period. There was a lab there where they were focusing essentially biomechanics and energetics that were trying to measure how they could improve running economy by sort of changing different footwear elements. So finally, when sort of this mandate became, can we get, you know, marathons had become closer and closer to this elusive 2-hour mark that seemed beyond physiological limits. 2012, Dennis Kometo broke the world record, maybe 2013. And that had stood for a while. And as it got closer to 2 hours flat, it seemed like, okay, just like breaking the 4 minute mark in the mile, is this a barrier that runners are ready to eclipse?
And has that happened?
So the official 2 hour mark has not been broken. According mm-hmm. to, you know, World Athletics or IAAF, that is still the world marathon record has not broken 2 hours yet. But Eliud Kipchoge, I want to say in a few years back, 2022, I could be off on that date there, but they did in the initial run back in 17, they did not break the 2 hour mark. They missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of this elaborate structure where they had a pace car that had a laser that shot in a perfect V formation, a bunch of, you know, elite athletes that had no problem running very fast 10Ks were brought in waves to essentially allow the runners to draft off of the location, the time of year, the elevation, everything that was you could potentially control to maximize this effort was orchestrated in 2017. They missed it. But yeah, they go back in 2022, I want to say around then they go back, I think it was in London, and Eliud Kipchoge does break with a new shoe with multiple plates that is not legal to run in, breaks the 2 hour mark convincingly. So in that time period though, the official world record has lowered, and athletes are getting closer and closer in a very sort of legal and organized structured way to that 2 hour barrier.
Okay, I just looked it up here. Kipchoge in 2019 ran a marathon under 2 hours, but like you said, it wasn't official because the shoes were not legal. So what makes shoes legal nowadays for competitive marathons?
Sure. So when this started in 17, the first thing was all the other manufacturers were sort of rushing to make sure that their elite athletes were competitive. And there was a whole bunch of debate as to whether this was no longer fair competition or all sorts of hand-wringing about whether the records or the times being run by these athletes that were getting faster should be considered legal, or generationally, how do we compare these athletes prior to the ones that preceded them? So what happens is the World Athletics comes together and they say, all right, here are the rules. We have stack height limitations, meaning you have at the maximum 40 millimeters is what the shoes cannot exceed that in terms of the height. And in terms of plate implementation, you can only use one plate. So you can't have sort of multiple carbon plates or multiple sort of rod systems building or blocking off one another, scaffolded amidst a crazy 50 millimeter super stack shoe. Like, right, if this can't be just this sort of open season for athletes, we have to find a way for everyone to compete in a legal capacity. So when they do show up at the starting line on major marathons or at the Olympics, where these marathoners are really going to be staking their career and their livelihood, they're able to compete in a fair way.
That makes sense. Now, those elite athletes are not usually coming through the doors of John's Run Workshop. So let's talk about the people who super shoes are for and why they might want to wear them. So first of all, who are they for aside from people like Kipchoge? Who would benefit from these shoes and why?
Super shoes as they exist today across multiple manufacturers and plates, without plates, different sort of foam applications. I think the way it would kind of be phrased, it's a much more democratic affair than previously thought. For anyone who wants a fun, fast shoe, you're chasing PRs or you're trying to qualify for major marathons, it doesn't really matter, age group, pace. There's something at this point, I think, accessible to runners across the entirety of the competitive or pacing spectrum. So everyone is welcome to what encapsulates the world of super shoes in 2025. The benefits, that's an interesting question. There's not a lot of, you know, this is something that's kind of been around for maybe a little bit less than a decade. And so while the world of biomechanics and running mechanics, and that is, there's a whole lot of literature on that from the world of human physiology and bioenergetics, how that applies to super shoes is a rather limited sample and window. And so there's all sorts of varying sort of responses as to what kind of shoe works best for any particular athlete. The overarching benefit that was thought was the super foam, obviously the sort of lightweight, cushioned, and resilient aspect of it, that works across the board. So I think how well people respond to it, you know, initially when Nike pitched their shoe, it was this 4% improvement in running economy. Mm-hmm. That was the name of the shoe. It helped sell it. It was part of marketing. They had, at the time, enough of a sample size, but primarily based on relatively competitive, if not elite athletes. So for marathoners who aren't running 4 or 5 minute miles during their marathons, how does that look or how do they benefit? And I think the jury is still out on that. As to how much you will improve will vary. I think there's too many variables at play to give a discerning answer. But in terms of the plate, it was meant to sort of facilitate ankle flexion, or from landing to toe off. It would sort of alter, if not improve, the individual's running mechanics. And that comes along with certain caveats. But if you can improve the ability for someone to sort of, whether it's retain a certain amount of energy when they're running, they don't lose too much in their stride, or you get faster toe off, all these things can help a runner pick up their minutes. But that comes, once again, not everyone responds to that equally, and not everyone feels comfortable in it. So it's one of those things that has the potential for all sorts of performance improvement, but it does not guarantee a certain kind of drop in time.
And that's what makes it such a bold move for Nike to have named the shoe 4%, because that's kind of a guarantee when you put it into the name.
And I think at the competitive level, you saw that work out at scale.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively, we've seen marathon times drop. It's just major marathons, you have anyone who's running close to 2 hours, people who are trying to beat cutoffs at around, you know, mm-hmm. 6 hours, let's say. How they'll respond, I think, is intriguing. And as we get more and more studies that analyze the entirety of what distance running looks like today, you'll probably get more definitive answers. But it's too new to make sort of across the entire world of running how much an individual can benefit. So I think the jury's still out there.
Yeah, and of course, it comes down to the individual. As we know, anything could happen on race day, no matter how great your shoes are, how much you train. You know, there's all kinds of factors that can affect your performance. We've been talking a lot about marathons, but what about different distances? Also, is it just for race day? How does it affect training?
For race day, I think, yeah, you can use it at 5K, 10K. There were athletes, and when they first came out, especially for something like the 10K, even on the track, there were athletes who had requested that their, whoever they were running for, delaminate or remove spike plates and then adhere them to the bottom of their marathon shoes. Huh. So they liked the effect of the cushion and the plate, but they needed sort of the spike grip for the track.
Right.
Yeah. If you're running a 5K or a 10K and you want a fun, fast shoe, it absolutely would work for that. The same story in tech has started to venture into track spikes. So anyone who's running a mile or a 3K or it's been so well received by athletes across the board, and the technology has evolved that it's gone all the way from ultra marathons down to a 1 mile event on the track. Using it for training, I still think if you're a brand new runner, this is your first investment in a running shoe, I wouldn't necessarily tell you to gravitate towards a plated shoe. Yes, you can train in super shoes. I don't have any sort of, I wouldn't say there's a worry there necessarily, but I would caution if someone's, this is their first investment or first time venturing into getting a running shoe for your upcoming training or just for general fitness. If you don't have a non-plated or more traditional running shoe, I would encourage you that to be your first exploration into this world. A shoe that has supercritical foam, that has a plate inside of it, is going to be a nice sort of addition to your lineup, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it as the first shoe you wear. Now, if you are more, say, a dedicated runner and you want an alternative for workout days or something you plan a race with, I would include training in it at least occasionally, because if it does sort of alter your mechanics, or you need to experience what that's going to feel like. And often your body will need to make some sort of adaptation to go along with it, so you aren't surprised on race day, or just in terms of the overall amount of volume that you'll spend running it. It's not an incremental use in training, and at least initially, probably as you adapt to it. And I think over the long term, especially the more we learn about the impact of super shoes, I think you'll see more people wearing them consistently. They have introduced alternatives away from pure carbon shoes, per se. If you like the way a racing shoe or a super shoe feels, but you'd like a little bit more of a easier entry, there are different plate designs, different foams that now brands are using as sort of introduction to the category models that are a little bit more conducive for consistent training. If you think a carbon plated shoe potentially be too aggressive for you.
Hey runners, real quick, I want to tell you about Kentucky Running sponsor Curex insoles, available at John's Run Walk Shop. Getting the right shoes on your feet is crucial, but it's only part of solving the foot health puzzle. You also need to make sure your arches are fully supported when you're running or just going through your day-to-day activities. Curex Run Pro insoles could be just what you need. Their flexible support and shock-absorbing cushioning help reduce fatigue. That prevents common running injuries, keeping you out there longer. Dynamic arch support with a deep decoupled heel cup fits, wraps, and locks the heel in place to improve stability, reduce pressure, and provide a perfect fit. And they help manage moisture with a mesh top layer and premium foam cushioning to keep your feet dry and running shoes fresh. They come in three profiles, high, medium, and low, to fit your individual arch type. I wear the medium profile, that's the yellow one, but to find which one works best for you, head to John's Run Walk Shop. Ask us to check out your arches and knee alignment, and we'll help you find the right pair of Curex Run Pro insoles for you. Learn more at johnsrunwalkshop.com/insoles. Is there anyone who should probably veer away from super shoes? Like, if you have concerns about injuries or things like that?
Because of how diverse it is today and how sort of complicated that term is, like, I can understand if there are some people who don't like the way how firm a carbon plate would feel, or if you try them on initially and there is something unnatural about it, I wouldn't force yourself into it. Mm-hmm. Because we've seen such positive response to non-plated super cushioned shoes, that tends to be a much more sort of universal approach. You can find shoes that would potentially present less injury risk that would still be fun and fast to run in. I really actually, at this point, I'm not too concerned in terms of recommending them. The one thing I would sort of make a sort of a caveat to that is they tend to be pretty soft. And there are certain sort of mobility issues. If you are not comfortable with a shoe that is initially so forgiving, all sorts of like general stability exercises you can use to make sure that joints and core strength that are generally considered to be important with running, if you're on a rather unstable or soft platform, those imbalances tend to be more prone to injury, or at least present greater risk. So something to take consideration if you're trying to step into a super critical max cushion kind of shoe.
All right, well, let's talk about the shoes that are available here at John's Run Walk Shop. What super shoes can people find on our shelves?
Sure. So we carry the New Balance SE Elite and the Adidas Adios Pro. Both of those are either carbon plate or carbon rod in the case for Adidas. And then sort of as a step down, if you will, the Saucony Endorphin Speed is a still plated shoe, but not carbon. And everything's a bit more of a entry level to the plated design super shoe. So a little bit more versatile in its application. So if you're not interested in a plated shoe, we also do have some sort of fun, fast, purely sort of foam based models. If you like the idea of super critical foam or something that's really fast, but having a plate embedded inside of the midsole doesn't speak to you, we're also going to have some options there for you as well.
Great. And what's the typical lifespan runners should expect from a super shoe?
That's a great question. I think early on, there were a lot of concerns surrounding the overall lifespan when super critical foam was first being applied to a lot of these prototype or first generation plated shoes. Since then, I do think people have pushed the limits, let's say past 150 to 200 miles in them, and are still getting some decent use out of them. When that kind of midsole material first arrived, the whole design was brand new. Now, 8 years later, I think there's much more feedback from athletes and participants, and you're probably going to be able to stretch the lifespan beyond super short, whatever, 150 miles or so. I would also say, just like in terms of my recommendations, if you're getting into this world of shoes, it's probably good to have a primary daily trainer that's not plated, that you're knocking out the bulk of your mileage in, at least if you're someone who's just getting into it for now.
Okay, well, as we wrap up here, what do you see as the future of super shoe technology? Any new innovations on the horizon that have you excited?
There's a lot of different brands who have played with alternative geometries. Midsole development, as the process in terms of developing supercritical foam becomes much more sophisticated, I think you're going to find shoes that are lighter and even more resilient. So I think this next batch of 2026 shoes that I've seen sort of come through and preview into the future, they're approaching a weight and a stack height that I thought, it just feels bizarre to hold in your hands. In the same way that you used to pick up a track spike and it just felt like fabric with a few pins in it, it's getting to that point with marathon racing shoes. But I don't know what the next major breakthrough in terms of the plate and the shape of the shoe, how much that is going to change now that we have very specific and limiting criteria as to what they can build a shoe around and it becomes standardized. I don't know if you'll have the same kind of breakthroughs happening. I think you'll much rather have incremental, at least in the short term. The more we learn about the biomechanics and performance with these shoes, you'll probably see greater nuance with them.
All right. Well, we've talked a lot about super shoes today, but of course, the best way to figure out if they're for you is just to try them on, see how they feel on your feet. So come on to John's Run Walk Shop. We got two locations in Lexington, Palomar Center and Chevy Chase. Ask about our super shoes and all the other great options we have for you. Kellen, thank you so much for sharing your expertise today.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. I enjoy getting a chance to talk about sort of a weird niche part of the running shoe world, but I think the more and more people get into the sport and they learn about them, it's something that they should probably are curious at least to try for themselves.
And thank you for tuning in. Please help others find the show by leaving a rating, review, subscribe. My name is Matt Reno, and I'll talk to you again soon on Kentucky Running.